ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय निगमा कल्पा तरोर गलितं फलं सुखा मुखाद् अमृता द्रवा संयुतं पिबता भागवतं रसं आलयं मुहुर् अहो रसिका भुवि भावुका निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलम् शुकमुखाद् अमृता द्रवसंयुता पिबत भागवतं रसमालयम् मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुका निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलम् शुकमुखाद् अमृता द्रवसंयुता पिबत भागवतं रसमालयम् मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुका Nigama, the Vedic literatures, Kalpataro, the desire tree, Galitam, fully matured, Phalam, fruit, Shuka, Srila Sukadev Goswami, the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, Mukat, from the lips of Amrita, nectar, Dharava, semi-solid and soft, and therefore easily swallowable, Samyutam, perfect in all respects, Pibata, do relish it, Bhagavatam, the book dealing in the science of the eternal relationship with the Lord. Rasam, juice, that which is relishable. Alayam, until liberation, or even in a liberated condition. Muhu, always. Aho, O. Rasika, those are full. Those who are full in the knowledge of mellows. Bhuvi, on the earth. Bhavuka, expert and thoughtful. Translation. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Purport. In the two previous shlokas, it has been definitely proved that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the sublime literature which surpasses all other Vedic scriptures due to its transcendental qualities. It is transcendental to all mundane activities and mundane knowledge. In this shloka, it is stated that Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a superior literature, but is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. In other words, it is the cream of all Vedic knowledge. Considering all this, patient and submissive hearing is definitely essential. With great respect and attention, one should receive the message and lessons imparted by the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedas are compared to the desire tree because they contain all things knowledgeable by man. They deal with mundane necessities as well as spiritual realization. The Vedas contain regulated principles of knowledge covering social, political, religious, economic, military, medical, chemical, physical, and metaphysical subject matter, and all that may be necessary to keep the body and soul together. Above and beyond all this are specific directions for spiritual realization. Regulated knowledge involves a gradual raising of the living entity to the spiritual platform. And the highest spiritual realization is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all spiritual tastes or rasas. Every living entity, beginning from Brahma, the first born living being within the material world, down to the insignificant ant, desires to relish some sort of taste derived from sense perceptions. These sensual pleasures are technically called rasas. Such rasas are of different varieties. In the revealed scriptures, the following 12 varieties of rasas are enumerated. 1. Raudra, anger. 2. Adbhut, wonder. 3. Shringar, conjugal love. 4. Hasya, comedy. 5. Vira, chivalry. 6. Daya, mercy. 7. Dasya, servitorship. 8. Sakya, fraternity. 9. Bhayanaka, horror. 10. Bhibhatsa, shock. 11. Shanta, neutrality. And 12. Vatsalya, parenthood. The sum total of all these rasas is called affection or love. Primarily, such signs of love are manifested in adoration, service, friendship, paternal affection, and conjugal love. And when these five are absent, love is present indirectly in anger, wonder, comedy, chivalry, fear, shock, and so on. For example, when a man is in love with a woman, the rasa is called conjugal love. But when such love affairs are disturbed, there may be wonder, anger, shock, or even horror. Sometimes love affairs between two persons culminate in ghastly murder scenes. Such rasas are displayed between man and man and between animal and animal. There is no possibility of an exchange of rasa between a man and an animal, or between a man and any other species of living beings within the material world. The rasas are exchanged between members of the same species. But as far as the spirit souls are concerned, they are one qualitatively with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the rasas were originally exchanged between the spiritual living being, and the supreme spiritual whole, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual exchange, or rasa, is fully exhibited in spiritual existence between living beings and the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is therefore described in the Shruti mantras, Vedic hymns, as the fountainhead of all rasas. When one associates with the Supreme Lord, one exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord. Then the living being is actually happy. These Shruti mantras indicate that every living being has its constitutional position, which is endowed with a particular type of rasa to be exchanged with the Personality of Godhead. In the liberated condition only, this primary rasa is experienced in full. In the material existence, the rasa is experienced in a perverted form, which is temporary. And thus the rasas of the material world are exhibited in the material form of raudra, anger, and so on. Therefore, one who obtains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. The learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. In the beginning, he desires to become one with the Supreme. Thus, less intelligent transcendentalists cannot go beyond this conception of becoming one with the spirit whole without knowing of the different rasas. Purport keeps going, but we'll start from here. So here we're establishing the Srimad Bhagavatam as the topmost of all the scriptures. And this is a very important thing to do. Because in the Vedic literatures, then there's basically two kinds of knowledge. There's the transcendental, and then there is the material which is to be used in the Lord's service. So, Prabhupada mentions here, so the Vedas says principles of knowledge, social, political, religious, economic, military, medical, chemical, physical, metaphysical, all these things. So that's all material. So this means the Vedas themselves, Sanskrit and all its different branches, astrology, your Vedic rituals, the histories, the different books on religious activities and logic, and then all the sub-books of medicine, economics, military, and architecture and construction. These are all considered material. And those that speak about the transcendental subject matter, like the Vedanta Sutra or the Upanishad, these are considered transcendental. Everything else is considered material. So now the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is very special because it is giving the topmost knowledge and at the same time showing the conclusions of all the other branches of knowledge. All knowledge is shown in the Bhagavatam, but only in relationship with the Lord. The previous verse says that material activities performed for material result, they are not dealt with in this book. That'll be in your karmakanda, your jnanakandas. But in here, all we're dealing with is how to perform your activities to please the Supreme Lord. Nothing else. There's no other examples that are given here. We see even those who are materialistic, they are approaching the Supreme Lord to fulfill their desires. So this is the speciality of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So after hearing all these things, like Prabhupada mentions, that a Brahmin, that he learns the Vedic knowledge, and when they become expert in Vedic knowledge and practiced in it, then if they have good association, they come to the platform of understanding this knowledge is meant for pleasing the Supreme Lord and not for anything else. Then they become a devotee, only at that platform. So the Bhagavatam is taking all that knowledge and bringing it to the platform of how to engage it in the Krishna service. That makes it the literature fit for the devotees. Well, all the other Vedic literatures are fit for non-devotees. Means devotees can also read, but they read them in connection with the Srimad Bhagavatam. They will not read them in any other way. There's no benefit to knowing the histories just for knowing history. But we know history, how it connects to Krishna. Or we know medicine, how it connects to Krishna. We know all these different things, how they connect to Krishna. And if one is interested in that, that is very special. That's why in the Gita, Krishna says the jnani is very dear to him. Because both the jigyasu and the jnani are interested in knowledge. But the jigyasu is interested in knowledge for knowledge's sake. He may go to the Lord for it, but once he gets that knowledge, there's every chance he'll go away. It's very practically demonstrated. We have seen many in the past. They approach, you know, the subject of Sanskrit or some other. They get very deeply into these things, Vedic literatures. And they become very expert. And once they become expert, they leave. You know, it's practically, you know, 95%. They learn it, they go. Because that's what they wanted. They didn't really want Krishna. They're willing to approach Krishna for that. Right? But that's not what's given here. This literature is not for those kind of people. Those kind of people will not be interested because this gives conclusion. The jigyasu is not interested in conclusion. He just wants to use his intelligence and have a good time. He takes pleasure in moving on the intellectual platform or the mental platform. But the devotee is tired of that. We've done that for so long. Just like in the Brahma Samhita. I don't remember the verse. Yeah. Millions, it doesn't say thousands or hundreds, it says millions of lifetimes the impersonalist is endeavoring to, you know, get to this platform. And the yogi, drilling the breath, doing all these things. Millions. So it's so rare to get someone, I mean, you have to be really determined to spend millions of years dealing with something so dry as impersonalism. Right? So that, but they don't want, because it's so simple. The Bhagavatam and that gives so simply. You just surrender to the Lord and this relationship and all that. And they don't want it because then I come off the intellectual and mental platform and I actually have to get down to something solid. I can't speculate about my position or anything. Now, it's just reality is there. I am the jiva. The Lord is there. I am his servant. You have to serve. That's it. Now I get down to reality. Fun's over. You know? Now it's time to just do something. You know? Do something practical for the Lord. So that's not appreciated. So here, this is not for that. It's not an intellectual treatise. Though it deals with the finest points. The other literatures don't deal with points this fine. Until one gets off the mental and intellectual platform, one cannot deal with the points as fine as the Bhagavatam, because these are purely spiritual points. So only the best can understand. So this is being mentioned here. Oh, expert and thoughtful men, relish this Bhagavatam. In other words, this is not something to just crack your head on, but this is something to taste. So then that brings into the... point here is that all the regulations of the scriptures that are given are to bring one to the platform of transcendental realization. No other reason. It means you can use them how you want. It's just like you have something. It should be used in a particular way. You can use it in another way. But the real thing it was meant for, the material world is created for the living entity to reestablish his relationship. And while he's working out his difficulties, his anarthas, he won't disturb the pure residents of the spiritual realm. That's what the material world's for. But you can take it and use it for your own purposes. But that's not what it's for. So then the next point is that in the material world, then everyone is looking, well, even outside the material world, the whole point is everyone is looking for rasa or taste. That is the basis of all activities. Everyone is doing an activity to get a taste. For whatever platform, you get your taste from the senses, you get it from your emotions, you get it from the mind, get it from the intelligence. You're doing something to get a taste from somewhere. It was interesting. I was visiting Israel. They have everybody will come and visit the temple once. They don't mind at all. Because they're very interested in one thing, getting a kick out of something. They call it a kef. Get a kick out of it, you know? So going to the Hare Krishna temple, it's a kick, you know? It's interesting, they're different, everyone sits around with bald head and ponytails and all the ladies are gift-wrapped, you know? And then, you know, they have this interesting food and funny songs and they get a kick out of it. So they all come and they get a taste. But then after that, then they want a different taste. The next day they go somewhere else, like that. So the living entities are engaged to get a taste. That's what they're doing. So in the spiritual literatures, means in the Bhagavatam specifically, then it's showing us how to get that taste, but in relationship to Krishna, connected to Krishna. You want taste. The living entity can't live without it. Because the karmi is so engrossed to try to get it, and because he couldn't get it, out of frustration he wants to kill himself spiritually. So he takes up the impersonal path. But the whole basis of the activity is based on rasa. That was the whole motivation. So these different rasas are there, these 12 rasas, that can be tasted in relationships between living entities. So the original form of these is in the spiritual realm. And these become reflected into the material realm based on desire. The material desire reflects the spiritual activities into the material world. And you get the Jaya Shishi Radha Gopina. You get these original rasas perverted into the material world. So this then gives us three different levels that rasas can be tasted at the spiritual platform, at the emotional platform, by following the regulative principles, and at the sensual platform. So in the material world, we find that one doesn't generally taste these main rasas so fully. They're only fully tasted in the spiritual realm, because there is a mood of service, a mood of sacrifice. Otherwise, one can't taste. One is doing the activity to please Krishna. And that is always the mood. So because one is always fixed in wanting to please Krishna in a particular way, then we see Krishna will reciprocate in that way. And that rasa then is always tasted. Then within that rasa, these other aspects may be also tasted. Different various variations, different flavors are there to give interest to the exchange between Krishna and the devotees. But everyone, Krishna is the one who is rasamoy. He's tasting all the rasas. He has all the relationships with everybody. He tastes five rasas. We just taste that one with Krishna. And then whatever our friends are that we perform these activities with, or other devotees, but it's all in relationship to Krishna. So Krishna is tasting all these things. What happens though in the material world is we don't put our position that we are serving and trying to please Krishna. Means the enjoyer is outside of us. Means I as a devotee perform service, but I'm not the enjoyer. Krishna is the enjoyer. So because of my serving mood, Krishna says, as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. So I surrender in a particular rasa, serve in a particular rasa, Krishna reciprocates in that rasa. And he tastes the pleasure of us rendering that service. But in the material world, it switches. I perform my activities, but I'm trying to get the taste out of it myself. So I'll act in a particular way to elicit a reaction from someone else. But it's for my satisfaction. Like the little child, he'll do something and the mother will say, don't do this, and they'll go, So then this gets a reaction out of the mother. And then the child gets what he wants. So they use these principles of getting the taste not for service, but for enjoyment. So they use it to get the rasa, but then to enjoy their sense, the senses. So the senses become the vishai. Or one will perform the activity to get the reaction that you want out of somebody, and then you enjoy that exchange, that attention. So therefore, it's not actually pure. The rasa, of course, when we say perverted, then we mean it looks like the spiritual realm. But what's perverted is its motive. What is actually going on? Who is enjoying what? Well, in the spiritual realm, it's Krishna enjoying, the devotee serving. In the material world, it's each living entity is performing the activity to get the reaction out of the other so they can each enjoy. So therefore, you find relationships where how you deal, the other person responds in the way you like, and they also like responding in that way, and they find that you respond in the ways that they like. And in this way, then the relationship is maintained. And as soon as we see that the other person doesn't respond the way I want, then the relationship is given up, it's broken. So this is the material world. While in the spiritual world, that's not the fact. Even if the Lord, especially in Vrindavan, means in Vaikuntha, the Lord, because it's so regulated, he'll always respond in the right way. One doesn't have to worry. Means how you expect, you go there to offer prayers, it's darshan time, the Lord is sitting on his throne, you know, surrounded by his intimate associates with Lakshmi. You go there to offer your prayers, he'll be there, he'll accept your prayers, guaranteed. You don't have to worry, right? But we see that in Vrindavan, to increase Krishna's taste, you may go to do some activity, but Krishna will react how he likes. So he may be there, he may not be there. Right? That is the point. Aslishiva pararatam pinashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karo. Adarshanan, maybe he's there, maybe he's not. Maybe he'll deal, maybe he won't. But he is getting the taste out of this. He is getting the flavor out of this. So that surrender is the greatest on the part of the devotees who are followers of the Goswamis, who serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because in here, that means I am surrendering, but still I'm not getting a particular spiritual reaction that I want. You know, of course it's for service, but I enjoy that. But here, it's I will do my service. How Krishna wants to accept it, that it's up to him. And then in that position, if he's happy, that makes me happy. If it makes him happy that I'm not happy, that's my happiness. So that's the interesting thing. We can see that the The manifestation of this mood between the enjoyer and enjoyed is the most clearly manifest in Vrindavan. Then in Vaikuntha, it's still there, but there's still a little bit of formality, and it doesn't have as much variety. But in the material world, it becomes switched. So one has to be very careful that when we as devotees want to have exchange with other devotees, we have basically two ways we can go about it. According to the Vedic literatures, which means we control our senses, we control our activities, we act according to sacrifice, so therefore we will perform our duties. Means I am doing my duties in the relationship, and because of this, then it's expected, understood, the other person will do their duties. And because of this, then that exchange of relationship or rasa takes on its proper flavor, as best as you can get in the material world. One feels sheltered, or one feels that one is able to give shelter, one feels that friendship, whatever is the thing, you will get it as close as you can get in the material world, if one follows Krishna's rules. Otherwise, if we follow the modern culture, using modern techniques, there's no regulation. So that means I am fully the enjoyer, recognizes the enjoyer, and I will go into the relationship, and as long as I'm getting what I want out of it, it lasts. And if it's not, it won't. Therefore, demand this, that, so many things, yelling, screaming, slamming doors, plates flying, all these things are going on. Because it's not working. We're not working according to the rules. Therefore, that's why the point is made that regulated knowledge involves gradual raising of the living entity to the spiritual platform. Regulated knowledge means the Vedic literature applied in a regulated way then establishes properly the platform of our senses and our emotional needs that we want, and that is culture. And if we don't follow these, then it's not culture. Or we can say, okay, it's culture. It may be refined, but it's not human culture, right? We have basically, 8,400,000 kinds of culture you can follow. So 400,000 of them are called human, and of those, a few are civilized. And everything else is uncivilized. It's animal. So it may be natural. Maybe everybody's doing it. But in the Kali Yuga, basically, everyone is two-legged animals. So we cannot take that culture. We can interface with it. We see Srila Prabhupada is very expert in interfacing with the modern culture. Wherever he went, everyone thought, this is a perfect gentleman. I've never met such a gentleman. Right? And so he was able to impress, deal and all that. Because if one follows the Vedic principles of relationship and exchange, those everyone can relate to. Everyone can relate to being considerate and always seeing, being sensitive to the other person's needs and how their emotions are moving. And that is only gained with the Vedic culture. It won't be gained in the other culture. It can't. Right? Even the most refined animal is still an animal. So there's a limit. So the point being made here then is, therefore, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. The learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. So this is part of our body of knowledge. That's why the Bhagavatam is giving through this medium. You can see the material, and you can see the spiritual. And you see all activities in relationship to rasa. Because that's what we're looking for. So the Bhagavatam makes it obvious. You want rasa, here it is. But now, this is how you get spiritual rasa, by engaging your activities in a regulated fashion in the material rasa. For Krishna. You want to be a brahmachari, there's a taste there. But there's rules, you'd have to do it properly. Otherwise it's uncultured. You're a grihastha, these are the rules, do it properly for Krishna. Otherwise you're an animal. These are all the different things. You want to be a businessman, here are the rules. Whatever it is, this is what you have to do. Then you are cultured. Then you are progressing spiritually because you understand the rasas. The principle is the same. It's how it's applied. Just like you have mechanics. You can have mechanics in a car. You can have mechanics in a washing machine. You can have mechanics in, you know, anything. The principles are the same. A good mechanic can work with anything. So in the same way as you understand rasa, that is this exchange between enjoyer and enjoyed, then one can understand what is the pure spiritual rasa and how it perverts into the material world. And that we don't get caught up in this perversion, trying to be the enjoyer ourselves, but we enter into any relationship as servant. Therefore, our name is Das, Dasi. We are servant. We are doing something as service. Right? Prabhu means master. We are Das, someone else's master. This is our dealings. Right? It's written in, but that's why it's there. Because I am the servant. I perform my part of the activity, how I'm supposed to deal. And in this way, then, the Lord is happy, and we are happy. Because we followed the Lord's rule, therefore both individuals become happy. Not that I did this, that makes the other happy. No, I did this according to Krishna's rule, that makes Krishna happy, myself and the other person are happy. So this is the position for knowledge. Then we understand the actual culture of Krishna consciousness, and we can fit everything in very, very nicely. Because we're going to do an activity for a taste. So at least we should understand what are the taste and how it works. Any comments by the elevated yatis or questions or
You mentioned one definition for jignasu, which is that cultivating knowledge is for the sake of knowledge. You can enjoy some taste from it. But also it seems like in our relation to our Vedic literature, other definitions are given. Tasmad gurum prapadyate jignasu shreya uttamam. So it seems that there it's jignasu is explained rather positively. And to give another definition, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has explained that the verse Chatur Vida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukrina Arjuna Arti Jignas Arti Ti Jnani Chavara Tarashava. He says there that this represents the four avanas. Therefore, there jignasu means the kshatriyas and the jnanis are brahmins. So there also it seems like there's kind of another sense to it. So can you give us some understanding how they kind of all fit together or relate?
Means that there is the interesting thing of the Vedic perspective is they always work on basically outlines. There's always an outline on which you can hang your body of knowledge. So depending upon kind of either the particular body of knowledge or what you're trying to, how you're trying to approach it, you can categorize in different ways, depending upon what you're trying to do. So if you want to look at it from the Dharma Shastras and try to understand who surrenders to Krishna in which way, then you can see these. But then there's also a slight definition of what is there, right? The Shudras, everything's going on, total anxiety, you know, because he can't control anything. He's being controlled. People are exploiting. He's anxiety. The businessman, once either business is not going well, he turns to the Lord. Kshatriya wants to know what's going on, you know. I mean, why things aren't running the way I've set it up. I know all these things. And then the Brahmin is interested in coming to, you know, more full understanding from that way. Then another way one can look at it, which is what I was mentioning, is the mood of surrender. What is the motive of surrender? Like that. And that can be from anyone. The king can also be wanting some, how you say, material wealth. Or we see Sudama Brahman, his wife was insisting you go to Krishna for wealth. So that's the artarti, which is would be classified as varnas, as the vaisha. But it is a motive in which you approach. So what I was talking about is motive, that we come to Krishna, we see here's the greatest knowledge, most amazing kind of knowledge. We come for that, and then as we dive into it, we forget Krishna, and then we become carried away. So it doesn't matter at which point you enter, either on which of these levels or which branch of knowledge or even which activity, You know, like we were discussing yesterday, at least from what I remember, early days, at least in America, majority of the devotees joined the movement not because of the philosophy or necessarily the kirtan, or but because of the halava. That was like the great, how you say, deliverer in that. So many that I spoke to, you know, like that. And I can also, how you say, I fall in that category. I can also speak from experience, yes. So that's how we may approach. But whatever it is, because it's in touch with Krishna, one's purified and one advances. So it doesn't really matter. What I was pointing out, meaning was just the pitfall, is that is the taste we're getting. We're getting just an intellectual taste, and if we're not careful to connect it to Krishna, then when the intellectual taste is not strong enough here, then we tend to go outside, you know, and become, you know, involved in the academic world and other things like that, where we feel we can get these kind of things, then, but not in connection to Krishna. We're not using them for Krishna. We're just, this is what we want, you know. Does that make any difference? Because the words, the Sanskrit is such that depending upon what is the mood, it can be used in so many ways.
I guess the biggest difference is the way it was used is when you have a verse like Tasmat Puru Prapadyate Jignasu.
Oh, okay. Then another way to deal with it is, this is saying guru about the guru and the disciple. So then in the Bhagavad Gita you get tadvidi pratipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So part of the process of approaching gurus, you have to inquire. So inquiring about these topmost subjects or spiritual subjects, that is the duty of the student, of the disciple, must inquire in this way. So just because one inquires doesn't make one a jigyasu. Jigyasu means whatever he does is only just to gain knowledge. But asking or inquiring, that is so that we actually come to the platform of understanding our relationship with Krishna. In other words, full knowledge, complete knowledge, not incomplete. Like in this category of jigyasu, he's interested in incomplete knowledge. He just wants to a particular area, and just as, you know, for the satisfaction of the intellect. But this other jigyasu, that means complete knowledge, including all these aspects, the also the understanding of the rasa, who we are and what we're supposed to do. Then it becomes complete. So that jigyasu is perfect. That is, in other words, one comes to that. You know, one gets the perfect thing. One is freed from anxieties. One becomes totally without anxiety because he has no desire. Right? The artha has desire, can't get it, he's in anxiety. The devotee comes to the platform of he has no desire, so he has no anxiety. So he's the perfection of that platform. Those who want wealth, he gets the greatest wealth. He gets the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, the association of the devotees, the holy name. He has the greatest wealth. The jigyasu, instead of just dealing with part, he gets the inquires always about the total aspects of the Lord and speaks about the Lord. And then the jnani understands the conclusions, and then the devotee has the greatest conclusions. So it's all of them have their natural place in the pure form. We're just talking when it comes into its impure form, its perverted form. That was the specific point I was mentioning. Does that help at all? Or?
Yeah, it seems to me that jnasu is like the beginning of really entering to inquiring to spiritual life.
Yeah.
The other ones are just kind of praying to Krishna for some kind of material benefit. But the jignasu is actually inquisitive. It's like the awakening of actually human knowledge.
Yeah. Of course. He is inquiring. You have something to say on that? Yes.
I think in the context of the particular verse Maharaj is referring to, that's referring to a particular type of jigyasi, one who's really inquisitive about the Shreya Uttama. What is the really ultimate benefit.
Yes.
So that very serious, inquisitive person, they should approach a spiritual master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is, this is the conclusion. Anything else? Or are you happy with that? Or then the conclusion is, that's the thing, the conclusion is very simple. That. Anything else? Yes.
So, like in this verse, we hear about spiritual emotions and, you know, the different, like, Prabhupada delineates the 12 different rasas. So, what about material emotions? Where do they fit into the Vedic scheme of things? For example, it seems that we're meant to subjugate our material emotions when they get in the way of duty. But besides that, where do they kind of fit into the life of a spiritual aspirant following the Vedic system?
When we talk about prescribed duties, that also means, because you have different levels of activities. You have one's sadhana, but one also has a situation where one is engaging, you know, more directly the conditioned nature. So that will be in the form of one's situation in the ashrams or the particular occupational work. So let's say, take example in the ashram, that you have a parent, they have their children. So there are duties in taking care of the children. So those are prescribed duties. So we're saying that the emotions get in the way. No, the emotions come from the duties. The difficulty comes is we think the emotions and the duties are separate. It's just like you put something in your mouth, you eat, you taste. So you perform the prescribed duties of parenthood, you get the emotional platform from that. What is going on is that, because it's the same principle, attachment, rasa is based on attachment. So if the attachment is there, we think it's emotional, but it's not necessarily. You can be attached to the senses. So there's no real emotional exchange going on. Like we're attached to eating, but there's no rasa happening between you and the food, or between you and another body, right? Like that. That's not happening. You know, yourself and someone else's hand touching you, there's no rasa happening. It's between the sense and the sense object, and we're tasting that. But the emotion happens when you're following the prescribed duties of the ashrams and varnas. So if you're dealing with the children or with the wife or with the friends according to the rules given in the Bhagavatam and by the acharyas, then you can actually taste the proper platform of emotion, material emotion. Otherwise, one is not. One's getting a lower form of it. So the part of the prescribed duties, you want to be a grihastha. That means you have to perform those duties that create the proper interaction between husband and wife, parents and the children, like that. That has to be done. Otherwise, no rasa's there. You don't. Then those aren't engaged in the Lord's service, and the whole thing, you become frustrated. Then it becomes a mess, and instead of thinking about Krishna, then one is thinking about one's ashram, or, you know, changing partners, or, you know, sticking the kid in the garbage disposal or something, you know, because it's just not working. And that then disturbs us. It means we were already disturbed in that we couldn't fully just surrender to Krishna. Right? So we took up sadhana. And then sadhana, we find we are not able to fully absorb ourselves. We need other activities. So we do activities according to our conditioned nature. And then, because we want something out of it, there's still a tinge, a touch, a smell of that attachment from so many lifetimes. So we need that security, let's say, of the household, ashram, and the relationships that are there. So you have to perform those duties. That's part of the service. Right? And so it becomes service as long as you do those duties, understand those duties are given by Krishna, and we are doing for Krishna. We see that these are Krishna's devotees, the wife, the children, the house, these are Krishna's. And Krishna gives rules how to take care of them, and I do those rules. So it's not out of that attachment. It's not out of sensual attachment. Like that. It's on a different level, and it gives a different level of taste. And the unfortunate thing is, it becomes a little hard, becomes a little, you know, theoretical, because in the Western culture, one doesn't have such a basis. So basically, everybody's working purely on the sensual, or at least a little bit maybe on the extended sensual platform. But they never actually come to the platform of religious duties. So the platform of religious duties is the point from where you can actually start to move, because all your activities become regulated, controlled, engaged in the Lord's service. And then one is able to think of Krishna. So we'll end here. This is the auspicious time for moving on to more important things. As Sefton, one, you know, person that we work with in many of our educational activities, and others, one gentleman who deals, you know, he helps people, facilitates people, understand how they can organize, especially their education and other things properly. And he had one comment. He says, we're the only institution that he knows of that everything stops for eating. Right? So that's because in the Sanskrit literature it says, Brahmana Bhojana Priya. Brahmins like to eat. So now we will move on to more important activities, right? Practical application. Now we've heard the theory. Now we will go out and perform our dharma, right? Gruntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaur Premanand ki.